Good morning to each one and a Christian greeting today. Good to be with you here and have enjoyed the service so far. For a couple of announcements, I guess we have the planning for a business session this Friday again at 7. I think we told you, but this building here is not available. We reserved one of the rooms in the library in downtown Medford. And Ramona and I had driven around yesterday and looked at different ones. And so there's the library in Central Point has a room, slightly smaller than this. There's a library in Phoenix down here that has a room roughly this size, maybe just a little bit smaller too. The library downtown here in Medford is a big library, and it has two rooms that are maybe both slightly smaller than this, and it has a big room that would hold up to 200 people that has a little more of a kitchen area in it. And then we actually went up to the one in White City as well, the library, and it has a room slightly smaller than this. The advantage about that one is it's only about 6 minutes from my house, so it's going to be a ways for some of the rest of you. So for this time, let's plan to meet at the one in downtown Medford there. Now, one of the things that we were reminded of yesterday is that in order for us to use these rooms, it has to be open to the public. So anybody is welcome to walk into our service and sit down and participate. So it may turn into a visitation if we go downtown. There's a lot of homeless people down there. So, and I think there's, in cold conditions, the library is used as a shelter from the elements. Except, she said, sometimes they've had a lot of trouble, so the front door is padlocked. So I don't know what it's going to lead to. We kind of thought, well, maybe it would be the days that we have the fellowship meals, if we were able to reserve that one with a little more room and have our get together there, it would be nice. A few issues with that. One is a library card is only allowed to make 5 of these reservations a month. And so we're going to probably have to share that. And I think it's fairly cheap, $10 or $15 to get a library card for a family. So maybe if we each of the families get a library card, it'd be easy to kind of spread around to make these reservations. The other thing is that one down there at Medford, the bigger room, is not available for next Sunday, which is when we were scheduled to have our fellowship meal. So I kind of have to work that through, maybe hopefully get on the schedule, maybe hopefully get the reservation thing working a little more smoothly and somebody in charge of that. I'm hoping to send out a notice of the agenda for this coming Friday night here early in the week. One of the things that we need to be thinking about is what book do we want to study for adult Sunday school. The way I was used to handle that, I would just at the business session just take nominations and a raise hand vote for what kind of study. Is there anything else that needs to be announced this morning that you thought of or would be that I missed? Okay, if not, I'd like to go into the message here. And maybe if you'd want to turn to the book of Exodus to begin with, Exodus chapter 3. And I've entitled the message this morning, The Great I Am. And Exodus chapter 3, this is the story of Moses and the burning bush. This is how where that story is found. And we know the stories of the Bible that led up to this. And the whole story of Moses being called of God to lead his people out of the land of Egypt to the promised land. And Moses kind of, starting out, and he killed that Midianite, that Egyptian, and then he ended up running through that whole experience, running out, and he's in the backside of the desert here. And then God hadn't forgotten him out there, or the calling that he was supposed to do. And so God met him there with this bush that did not burn up. And so here we find this Moses. He's talking to God out here in this bush that didn't burn up, and he went over there to see what this thing was like and or what was going on here. And God told him to take off your shoes off your feet. You're standing on holy ground, and I want you to go take care of this project for me. And so we're going to start in there when they're in the middle of their discussion at verse 10 of chapter 3 of Exodus. And read a few verses. It says, "Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And Moses said unto God, Who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh, and I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, Certainly I will be with thee, and this shall be a token unto thee, that I have sent thee. When thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve God upon this mountain. And Moses said unto God, Behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, The God of your fathers has sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, What is his name? What shall I say unto them? And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And he said, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am hath sent me unto you. And I'm gonna stop reading there. And so here was Moses being sent to this children of Israel. And I don't know when he asked that question. I noticed this morning. He asked a question to God. He said, when I go tell these people that the God of your fathers has sent me, who shall I say that this is? And I kind of wondered if maybe the people there in the land of Egypt through those 400 years have kind of lost sight of this God, who he was and what he was. And, you know, yeah, it was the God of my fathers back there somewhere. But, you know, they were pretty bought into Egypt, and Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are a long ways away from this time here. And so who is this that you're sending? And God's answer is what I wanted to focus on. I am. I am that I am, he told him. And, you know, what an answer. If you were Moses and you go back and I am has sent me. And that we heard a bit this morning about the fear of God. Who God is, and appreciated what was shared there. But the idea that comes through to me by this I am is just kind of the all encompassing omnipresence of God. It's just there. God is everywhere. He is just surrounding the situation. He's just all around. He was just there. He was the God, the true God, the only God, the real God, if you will. And the illustration, I am, was just so poor, so big, so all-inclusive. I am has sent me. I looked it up a little bit, and that's the same word that is translated, I am. It's found in Genesis 1, verse 3. God said, let there be light, and there was light. That word was light. Is the same one as I am. It's just there. And I thought about light a little bit, and kind of, I think it's maybe a good illustration of kind of the all-pervading nature of God, where he is just everywhere. This light is just there. It's just part of our existence, our experience as humans. Part of this world, this universe in which we live in, is this all-pervading light. It's just there. And I had to think about that light. And what would it be like? How would you put an end to that? How would you gather that all up and put it in a box and put it away? Or, you know, you picture the sun, one of the stars, the light that's coming off of that. If you were tasked with, you know, put that all away, all that light, go get it. And all the light that has come off of the sun, and where it's going, it's your job, put that out, gather it all together and put it back in the little box that is a star. And, you know, the task would be impossible. Just gone and spread and bouncing and miles and throughout the universe, this light is just gone. It's just all there. The task would just be impossible. In that ways, we can see the illustration that God is like that. He said, I am. I'm just there. It's just part of your existence. I am. This message of God and who he was transcends the boundaries of space and time. And for me, there is something, you know, just really all inclusive and inspiring for God to describe himself as I am. He is just there. And it heightens our fear of him, our appreciation, our awe of him. When we think of, okay, with our talents or abilities, what can we do in the face of that kind of presence and power and just the omnipresence and the omnipotence of this God? A being without need, self-sufficient. God's I am doesn't come with a need, you know, and he sent Moses there to do this. There was no question in God's mind whether or not he could get this done. You know, this was something that was easy for him. And we go on to the story here, just the miracles that immediately start happening, where he throws his rod on the ground and turns into a serpent. And, you know, then we go on to the story of the actual exodus from Egypt in the face of this man, Pharaoh, rebellious man that he was. And God's just complete control and confidence and not arrogance and pride, but just the ability. It was just there. God was there. He just was. He just was something that was there, and his ability met the needs. You know, it's so much different than us. We are such needy creatures. Our existence depends on the I am. We are not self-sufficient of our own. We are taught in James chapter 4, verses 13 to 15, it says, "Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little while, a little time, and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that." And so that's the difference between us and the I am. You know, we're in the maybe it'll work out. You know, if the Lord wills, we'll, you know, get home from this meeting without a flat tire and without a wreck and without all the dozens of variations that could happen in our lives. You know, if the Lord wills, our house isn't burned down when we get home. Or, you know, but for God, it's not that. He just has it completely under control. I am is not our prerogative, it's God's. And there's some really neat things about that trust. So we have the trust, the confidence that we can have in this God who is. He is all pervasive, all powerful. I want to change gears a little bit now and think about Jesus as part of the Godhead. And he, at different times in his life, used this phrase, I am, followed by a description of what he was. And I want to look at some of those, and so I've got them down here. And I'd just like to go through these different ones that Jesus said. The first one I have is, he said that I am the bread of life. This is found in John 6:35, and then also in verse 41 and 51 of John 6. I'll just read those three verses. And Jesus said unto them, I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. And then the Jews then murmured at him, because they said, I am the bread of life which came down from heaven. And then in verse 51, he says, I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever, and the bread that I will give him is my flesh, which will I give for the life of the world. And so this idea of Jesus being the bread of life, and I think he's talking about our spiritual life there. Obviously, he meets our physical needs, but our spiritual life. And in a lonely world, in a world where euthanasia and suicide and ending it all and depression and lack of fulfillment, all of those things in that kind of a world, of hunger spiritually, just not satisfied, just have a life of loss. Caleb was here and had Two Oceans a few weeks ago and talked about his, and he met this rich, wealthy man who was just, he had so many needs spiritually. A man who said, over Christmas, he gave his daughter $100,000 as a Christmas gift. So a man of means, a man of you would think he should have been able to find satisfaction somewhere in this world. But no, he was fearful about his health. He was fearful about his things being robbed. He was just so unsatisfied, and his relationship was broken with his daughter. Even with the money he gave her, he kind of lamented that didn't fix their relationship. It didn't help. And so his spiritual life was one of starvation, just in really bad shape. Jesus said, "I am the bread of life." You want to fix all that? You want to make it functional? You want to have a satisfactory, meaningful spiritual life that actually makes sense, that is sensible and functional? Get close to Jesus. He can feed you. I like that. Jesus said, "I am that. I am the bread of life. I have those answers." Jesus also said in John 8:12, and also in chapter 9, verse 5, he said, "Then spake Jesus unto them, saying, I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. And again, as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Jesus said, "I am that. I'm the light." And when I think of light in this spiritual sense, I think of the ability to make coherent decisions about what to do, what the next step is in my spiritual journey. Jesus is the light for the path. Sometimes it feels like the light doesn't go down the path very far. But I think it is our testimony, my testimony, my wife and I, as for the last number of years we have sought the will of God, there has been the next step of light that we were able to take. And we can trust in Jesus. He says, "I will do that for you. I will give you light for the path, for the next step." And so he has taken himself that upon himself and promised to be that. I am the light of the world. Another illustration we could think of when we think about the light of the world is the light of the world that the church is supposed to be. As Jesus is the head of the church, and a city that is set on the hill cannot be hid. That idea, the church, as we gather together and we can show to the world what a confident walk of faith with brothers and sisters in Christ, what that can look like. And it can be a real attraction for people. And people tend to look on our kind of plain people or these settings and really admire the culture. "Wow, you have such a nice culture. You have maybe this culture of singing." That's one of the things that people appreciate, is our four-part singing. The family values, or the homemaking that includes sewing your own clothes and teaching your children, all of those things that, "Wow, just admire your culture. That is really neat what your culture is." But I think we dare not ever lose sight of the fact that the culture flows out of walking in the light, walking close to Jesus. I want to use the word symptom, but that's not quite the right idea. The word doesn't come to me, but the idea that this is what happens when you walk closer. This is what happens. You just develop this culture of closeness and brotherhood as you walk in the light. So that light of the world, Jesus said, "I am that." Jesus said that, "I am the door," John 10 and verse 7 and verse 9. Then Jesus said unto them, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep." And verse 9, "I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture." And Jesus is the way. This is the only way. Jesus is the right way. And again, in a world who is seeking for where the answers are for them, I talked. There's a gentleman who has worked with us off and on for a number of years, and a person who was estranged from his father, and kind of at a loss spiritually, but a very accomplished person, someone who's, you know, has, as far as his means, he is well off. Him and his wife, they travel at will. They don't, you know, have to work that terribly much, but he is into culture. One of the things that he is exploring is his spiritual side. You know, he's a very intelligent, educated, affluent person. What's his spiritual life about? What is this all about? It's one of the things that he looked into was Buddhism, way down this trail of Buddhism, trying to find fulfillment and happiness and meaning to life in Buddhism. I talked a little bit about the in Sunday school about our experiences there in Hawaii as people try to find fulfillment spiritually through New Age things and maybe this god Pela there in Hawaii, the volcano there. Or I remember traveling years ago now with my dad and brother Matt, and we went to Korea and a business trip, and we got up early one morning. In the hotel we were staying at, as we traveled around the country visiting different customers, we stayed at this hotel and got up early in the morning, and it was on the coast. And it was actually on the east coast of Korea. And so I just went out on a walk, had some coffee, and went out there, and the sun was just coming up over the ocean. And I saw over there on this rock this person, and they were doing something as the sun came up, and they had their hands up, and they were bowing down like this, you know, as the sun came up out of the ocean. And I realized that this person was worshiping this rising sun. That's where they're you know, early in the morning, getting meaning out of this sun that we think of the God. God said he made that, and put that in touch. But in their search for meaning, I did think, well, you know, of things to worship, at least the sun provides light and warmth and some other things that are of value as compared to worshiping the God there of lava in Hawaii. But nevertheless, he said, "I am the door." And so I think it is our prerogative as we witness in this community to remember that in their search for spiritual life, there's a lot of wrong doors, a lot of things people are trying that don't work. Jesus said, "I am the door." All right, the next one here. Jesus said, "I am the good shepherd." And that is in John 10, verses 11, and again in verse 14. "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep." And again, "I am the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and am known of mine." What does it mean to be a good shepherd? I thought of Psalm 23 there, you know, that story of Jesus. He does things for his sheep. He leads them. He takes care of them. He provides for them. He does all these blessings of things. He watches out for them. He protects them. He just loves these sheep. And I think that is Jesus. That's what he would have for each one of us. And he would have each of us to mimic him as we interact with the people around us, to be that for others, to have that thoughtfulness, to take care of others. I am the good shepherd. And we'd never say that about ourselves. I am the good shepherd. But again, just kind of this overarching concept of Jesus. I am. He is this. We can trust this. All pervading, all fulfilling good shepherd. I am the good shepherd. Okay, another one that he said, "I am the resurrection and the life." And this one I took from John 11, verse 25. It said, "Jesus said unto her, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live." And I think that in a lot of ways, people they fear the end. And in our sober times, we ought to take our opportunity to think that through. You know, there is coming a day. For each of us, we don't know. Maybe it's tomorrow for us. We don't know. This past week, I was on group chat with some people we work with, and I used the word. I was trying to write certified seed, and so I just shortened it to cert. And one of the guys kind of smarted off about that. Is that certified or uncertain, or what are you trying to say about your seed here? And We aren't certain about stuff. We don't know what it is. And so I just wrote back to him and told him, as of this writing, Jesus has not yet returned. So that's about all the more certain I can be about this. As of this writing. This week, my brother, older brother Trevor, and his wife are in Missouri back where her mom is. And she had a massive heart attack. And she's on life support. And the family's there trying to decide what to do medically about the situation. She's an older lady, but her life is coming to an end. And then what? That's the question about the Jesus answer here. I am the resurrection and the life. At the end of her life, this older lady, if she dies in faith, step into the next life with Jesus, with resurrection. What's it going to be like? And just Jesus is what provides that for us, to walk in his light, in his path, his way. This past week, we were kind of talking through some of the things there at family devotion. Nathaniel asked the question. We were talking about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, reading through some of that. And God changed his name to Israel. And then later, God called him Jacob. Why? Why did God do that? If he changed his name, you read that. And here later, clear down here in Exodus, he refers to it as, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Why not Israel? Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. Why this change of name that he didn't use it? And I told Nathaniel, well, when you get to heaven someday, some evening, well, there's not going to be evening there. Well, some day, some time. Why don't you maybe you'll have a chance to go over there and find Jacob and just ask him, why was this? Why did it turn out this way in your life, back when you were on the earth? And maybe he has an answer. I don't know why it is. I can't answer that. I don't know why he didn't follow through with his calling. But what I'd like to notice, I'd like it to be that smooth, that real for us. Jesus is the resurrection and the life, that, there's a coming of life that is just one step, just one transition, just one day it's going to end, and you're going to step into the next life. Jesus can deal with that, that fear, that change, that reality. I am the resurrection and the life. And then we can be there with him and ask him questions and thank him for what he did, what he has done for us. All right, another one, John 14:6. Jesus said unto him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. Again, that's close to the idea of him being the door. But I like the idea of that being the truth. In my lifetime, there has never been in society such a wildly freewheeling version of information, misinformation, slanted versions, and who knows what the truth is. It is really confusing if people are attempting to work together and walk in alignment politically and get stuff done. If they don't believe in the same truth, it is a frustrating, chaotic way to deal with life. The neat thing about Jesus is we can go back to, this is the truth. And so when we look in our Bibles, we can just be settled with that. Things of questions around evolution or six-day creation or you name it that you may face in life, we can just be settled. This is the truth. We can start there and we can calibrate everybody's philosophy around whether or not it aligns with this truth. Okay, another one. Jesus said, I am the vine in John 15, verses 1 and also in verse 5. I am the true vine and my Father is a husbandman. And verse 5, I am the vine, you're the branches. He that abideth in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit, for without me you can do nothing. And the picture there that it gives is our us being able to produce fruit by walking close to Jesus, by walking in his will and way. I am the vine, and my Father is the husbandman. And as spiritual beings, if we want to be successful, if we want to contribute to society, those around us, we have to be connected to Jesus, walking in his, in obedience to what he tells us to do, giving up our will, sacrificing for the will of God. I am the vine. Another one it said I have here, I am the first and the last, Revelation 1:17. And when I saw him, I fell at his feet as dead. And he laid his right hand upon me, saying unto me, Fear not, I am the first and the last. And I just like that kind of all-encompassing, all-inclusive picture of Jesus. You know, he has all the answers. He can do everything. He knows it all. He was there at the beginning. He set it up. He knows what the law says. He knows what his commandments are. He knows our hearts, what we've tried to do. And he just knows it all. I am there. And there's such a rest in that as we think of our spiritual life. Okay, two more here. He said, I am the promised Savior, Revelation 22:16. I, Jesus, have sent my angel to testify unto you these things in the churches. I am the root and the offspring of David, and the bright and the morning star. And I suppose there was a time there in Revelation. We take that for granted, maybe, but if you would have lived in the era of this change from the old covenant to the new covenant, and maybe you questioned this Jesus. Here he said, I am that. I am the root and the offspring of David and the bright and morning star. I am the Messiah. He was that. And then the last one that I have here is Jesus said in John 17 in verses 14 and 16, I am not of the world. I thought that was so interesting. I have given them thy word, and the world hath hated them because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Verse 16, they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. You know, here it was his self-perception, what he felt about himself. I am not of the world. And I don't know what you think about, or if that is how you would describe yourself. I am not of the world. There's a few things about that. It's kind of the revulsion. You know, Jesus, that's not me, the world. Maybe I thought of, in our society today, some of the parades, like maybe a gay pride parade with the rainbows and the nonsense that goes along with that. And that's probably how I feel. Maybe that's how Jesus, when I think of that, you know, that is just not me. I want nothing to do with that. Not me, not my project. You know, that doesn't describe me. I am not of that world. And so that gives a little bit of a picture of the revulsion that I hear from Jesus here. I am not of the world. Is that how we describe ourselves? One thing that is interesting that we have to think about, it ties a little bit to the adult Sunday school when the whole idea of doctrine comes up. I am not of the world. In order for us to be clear that we are not of the world, we have to have a pretty good understanding of what the world is, where the world starts, where the church stops, who we're not part of. And part of that is very clearly kind of the whole doctrinal question. Where are you on these commands of Christ and that separation that comes? If we were to go through the rest of the First and Second Timothy, and Titus actually taught those books, pastoral pests, several times at Bible schools, and you know, that idea of doctrine, get your doctrine right, you know, correct that, false teachers, what they say, and what to watch for. It's just a huge piece of his instruction to this young minister, Timothy. And I think in that we find that, you know, that separation of the world. He said, I am not of the world. And to keep that clear, make sure that he knew the difference. And I think we do well, too, to kind of keep that question, all right, where does this world start? Where does it stop? We need to keep a separation by tying into Christ and being obedient to his word and will. And that'll make this automatic separation. It'll be a symptom, if you will, that'll come from following Christ will be a distance from the world. It'll be the other kingdom. Those are the words that I would like to bring this morning as I think about this. Jesus and God saying, I am the great I am. I am these things. We can count on it with Jesus. We can trust in it. We know. Step out in faith. He has these answers and these promises for us.